Welcome in to Open Gym here on Texas Sports Unfiltered. Myself, Patrick Davis, alongside Matt Gladson of Texas Longhorns on SI. And of course, you, the third member of Open Gym. So how the gym is open. Text line's open, 512-222-9328. Or over there on the chat, Facebook, Twitch, X, and on YouTube. That is where you can get in contact with us and hang out with us here on a Friday. And Matt, it is a Friday, so it is a open bar, open gym.
Indeed it Friday. Is.
Have a couple brewskis with you if you got one and you want to start off your weekend with us. Come on and have a drink with us. I'm just getting started, Matt, because I've got people coming to the house post show, so you know, I'm just getting warmed up for these weirdos to show up, these Alabama weirdos to show up at my house.
I am excited to see John Mateer play like dog water tonight. I don't know about you.
I'm just hoping that Alabama wakes up and plays good football. If Oklahoma beats him twice in a year, I don't like that one bit.
I mean, Alabama's not Alabama anymore, you know?
Well, no, but it, like, and the weirdest part is someone said this earlier, that it's like, well, Alabama will be a four loss season. And you're like, all right, but can we say it's a four-loss season when one is in the SEC championship and one is in the bowl game or like in a playoff game? That feels like not quite a four-loss season as much as it is a 10-win season. Like, you still had a really good season.
You call it a 10-win season. You don't call it a four-loss season.
Yeah, I was like, I get that that's a four-loss season, but that's a little...
Unless it's Oklahoma, then you call it a four-loss season.
I was like, that's a little over the top, because you're like, well, then they shouldn't have played conference championship game and shouldn't, you know, then the playoffs, and they wouldn't have lost four games. But they have to win a championship to not be a four-loss team, and I don't think this is a championship Alabama team. So they will most likely be a four-loss team. Yeah, CB, not everybody should drink. The people who drink it, enjoy it. And if you don't, good on you, because sober people are also make the world go round. So... I'm not a peer pressure guy of trying to get people to go into all of my vices. I'm fine with everybody having their own way of life. Don't have to.
Hey, I was sober for 75 days at one point, and it was glorious. Drinking's not for everybody. That's okay.
And then you turned one.
I was actually sober for yes, no, I'm not going to make that joke. yes. Anyway, open bar Friday. I'm excited about this game tonight. I'm very excited about this game tonight. You know how excited I am about this game tonight, Patrick?
How's that?
I put money on it.
Ooh. I'll tell you, last night I may have had a little action on the Seahawks-Rams little player props out there, and really needed that overtime. Really needed that overtime, and it came through for me in overtime. So I was pretty happy about that overtime.
Yeah, I was still under the impression that a touchdown won you the game in overtime. So, like, no, Puka Nacua scored that touchdown, and I was like, oh, it's over. And then it kept going.
No,
I was like,
you know, because, yeah, both teams get possession now. Only if you kick – if a field goal on the first one, then a touchdown wins it. Or if you punt the first time, then a touchdown wins it. But both teams have to have possession of the football. It was a little, because I was like, wait, does this end it? And then they were not celebrating. I was like, okay, I don't think that ends. I think we're right.
Yeah, I was very, very confused. But then I remembered they changed the rule, and I like the rule. I think that's the way that should be. But just for the purposes of last night, I hated it.
Yeah. Oh, and CB, I got you. The choosing not to drink is a very valid choice in life. I'll say this. Hats off to McDonald for going for two at the end of that game.
Yeah.
Like, do you know, they said no one's ever won a playoff game or won a overtime game by going for two.
Yeah, that was, like, I mean, hey, you get to secure the number one seed in your division, or then you're still in the playoffs, whether you lose or not. So you might as well go for it.
No, exactly. No, I think it was, but yeah, that was a heck of a game last night. I enjoyed watching that one and the comeback and the Seahawks, and it was a fun game to watch. For someone who did not have a horse in the race, it was a fun game to watch.
If I was rooting for the Rams, it would not have been as much fun to watch. But considering I didn't have a team, it was really fun to watch.
I mean, I was just rooting for Matthew Stafford in fantasy because he's my fantasy quarterback. Oh, and I'm trying to Puka Nacua last too? Place. No, I did not have Puka Nacua. But Stafford put up 47.7 for me, so I'm doing all right.
Yeah, I had a friend who had Puka and Matt Stafford, so she's at 77 points right now. After Thursday night, she is at 77 points. So that is it's a great one. We want to get into a little bit more Will Muschamp news. We talked about it a lot yesterday, but there is more information, and Sark spoke to the media today. So we'll get to more of that. Just some other odds and ends that I saw around that I want to get into before we get into too much more, Matt. But of course, I also want to get, we're going to talk a lot of playoffs, make our picks, Matt's Bourbon Banter, a lot to coming up on the show today, and whatever you guys want to talk about. I did see Nakua's brother's in trouble. That Nakua's brother thing is really weird because they're like, he's getting arrested for stealing a car, but it feels like he knew the guy because they're saying he took the car without the guy's permission to do Thero, who he plays for the Lakers. But they're like, it seems like they knew each other because it's not like, oh, he stole this car. It's like they were using a car that I guess they had access to, but they weren't supposed to be using. Something to that effect, which is still stealing a car. Yeah. You learn from listening to Will Smith's Parents Just Don't Understand. You know that those things. Which, by the way, so I've been listening to Christmas music, Matt, to get a little bit more in the spirit when I'm walking my dog in the morning, you know, trying to get a little bit more in the spirit. So you watch in your... you know, listen to different songs. And so I'm listening to different playlists, trying to find songs that I don't know for Christmas songs, like by famous people. And, you know, I really love weird Christmas, like cash grabs and the ones where they're like, oh, we got to do a Christmas song. And they turn one song into a Christmas song. I'm a big fan of it. They're always bad, but I'm a big fan of it because some part of me loves bad music. Like some of your favorites would be, Christmas Dirtbag by Wheatus, the Teenage Dirtbag. There's a Christmas Dirtbag. Taking Care of Christmas by Bachman Turner Overdrive instead of Taking Care of Business. That's a real one. I heard one today on a mix, just listen to random Christmas music on a mix. That was, do you know the song Thank You for Being a Friend by Andrew Gold? It's the theme for Golden Girls.
No.
If you probably heard the song before where it's like, thank you for being a friend. It's a very famous song, especially because it was on that song, that show. It's been on tons of commercials. So it's just a really famous song. And then I hear the song and then it's like a Christmas version. And I go, okay, this song's already kind of weird because it's like it's kind of like a TV jingle for the beginning. And then it goes into when we die and our, you know, our particles disperse and we're in the afterlife and all this stuff, the end of the song, it's way past when the show's already started. So it's already kind of a weird song. Literally the only thing different about this Christmas version, Matt, sleigh bells, just the little sleigh bells ringing. That's it. It's the exact same song. And someone just dubbed sleigh bells over the top of it and then re-released it as a Christmas song. That is the worst thing I've ever heard. And it's hilarious. I'm just like, how is this? And like, it's one of the few Christmas songs that talks about dying. Usually not in most Christmas songs.
And
I'll say this, Rodney, I don't listen to traditional Christmas music as much. I listen to pop band. Like one of my favorites is Mistress for Christmas by AC/DC. It's a weird song, but it's like, I like that kind of stuff a little bit more. So you try and find these good ones. Backdoor Santa by Clarence Carter is another great song about a guy sneaking in the back of houses while the husbands are at work to have sex with their wives. And he just calls, it's a Christmas song. It's called Backdoor Santa. It's like, those are great ones. So that kind of music is what I'm listening to more of. And you try and find stuff like that. And CV Christmas Shoes is the worst song ever recorded, thought of, just the idea of it. There's multiple Hallmark movies for it. It is ridiculous.
My favorite Christmas song of all time, and it's not close. I listen to it every single Christmas on repeat for a long time. And when I'm driving around looking at Christmas lights, It is the best Christmas song ever written, as a matter of fact, Patrick.
Okay.
It is Merry Christmas from the Family by Robert Earl Keane Jr.
Okay.
It is so good. And I encourage everybody to go listen to it as soon as you get done listening to this 2-hour show. After that, listen to it.
But after that.
Okay. Right now, listen to Open Gym.
Right now, listen, yeah. And CB, I'll tell you, Magic 95.5 did ruin a lot of Christmas music for me because I worked there for a while, and it ruined a lot of Christmas music. They start Christmas music so early. It's like Thanksgiving, and then it started to move up before Thanksgiving. I don't know when they started now, but yeah, here in Austin, it's a radio station that it plays only Christmas music during the holiday season, and it is it's the same songs over and over and over. And if you're in the office, you just keep hearing those songs over and over.
You know, another really good one that has just been like a remix because of social media, kind of like the one where they just put the sleigh bells over it. It's With Arms Wide Open. I think it's With Arms Wide Open by Creed, but with the Mariah Carey music instead of Creed's actual so music.
It's a little mashup there.
I like Hello, it. My friend. We're here again. Yeah, it's fantastic.
I like it. Yeah. I try and do the weirder music. So I've been trying to get in the spirit a little bit more, trying to get more in the spirit because all I do is watch sports and do this. So I've not really gotten in the spirit so much. So, and like that was tonight, this morning I was going grocery shopping and you're going through the store and everybody going through the store and you see like people getting stuff for Christmas and everything, and they're trying to, and I'm like, wings, queso. we're still in football season, guys. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, another one. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer by DMX.
Oh, that's a solid.
That's a classic.
That is a solid. Christmas Rapping by Curtis Blow is just a silly song. And it has one of my favorite rhymes of all time, which is talking about parents getting presents, and it's like the parents get presents too, like a new TV and a stereo. Like, did you write that and they both ended in an O, so you thought it rhymed, and then when you started to rap it you were like, oh, those words do not rhyme at all.
I love that it's
a jarring rhyme if you're actually listening to the lyrics. There's Santa Claus Goes Straight to the Ghetto is all-time great. James Brown, not the Snoop Dogg version, the James Brown version is all-time great. I've listened to Snoop Dogg one, but I'll listen to James Brown 100 times. Just it's a sample for the Snoop Dogg version, and the music on it is just great. So I love the James Brown version of Santa Claus Goes Straight to the Ghetto. Good stuff there on some Christmas music. A couple odds and ends there, Matt, before we get too far into talking football. All right, these are football. I did see something. I'm not a message board guy, Matt. I really stay off of message boards. There's not much fun in there. But I saw one this morning from Michigan.
Ooh.
And I was curious why Michigan was talking about PK.
New DC.
And I was like, I just saw it, and I wanted, and I was like, why are they talking about PK? And this is the theory. This is the theory that was presented, and I do not believe it. But I like the theory. I like how that they were saying that PK, that Alabama wanted to hire PK at a point when Kalen DeBoer got there, that they were going to try and steal away PK, but Texas was able to keep him. So now that PK was probably already listening to an offer from Kalen DeBoer to go to Michigan to be Kalen DeBoer's DC. And that is why Texas had to get rid of him. Was because he's going to Michigan with Kalen DeBoer. So it was, I love the theory of it because it is, I'm like, I still very much don't believe that Kalen DeBoer is going to Michigan, but I do like fans. Just, it's always fun to go to another fan base and see them be as delusional as we are sometimes. Just love to watch.
Yeah, that's pretty absurd, but it's pretty much, pretty accurate for message board standards, I would imagine. My favorite back in the day is when, you know, I used to be on Ole Miss message boards all the time before I got into media. And when Houston Nutt got fired.
Yeah.
It was John Gruden, John Gruden, John Gruden. And then every time, like there's an Ole Miss coach opening, is like, well, that just means it's time for John Gruden. And everybody was so bought into the John Gruden at Ole Miss thing. And then John Gruden at Tennessee, and then John Gruden here, and then it was crazy. There's always some sort of weird, weird conspiracy theories on there, and it's actually really entertaining. Like, I almost got a subscription to TexAgs just to look at the message board and laugh at people.
It is an interesting one. We also got a couple different reports today, Matt. One was that Arch Manning is taking a pay cut.
Yeah.
To which people I've talked to have told me he has never taken money from the house. He's not planning to take money from the house because he makes lots of money in NIL. He's doing very, very well in NIL, so they don't have to pay him. So the story could be Arch continues to say, guys, use that money on elsewhere to bring in other players because I'm pretty well taken care of right now. Making millions of dollars on these commercials. If you watch that Ohio State game, the first like three commercials in the first commercial break were all Arch Manning. Mm-hmm. You're like, that dude's doing okay. So that report, I don't know what the, like, it's technically somewhat true because he is not taking money. But from more sources that I have, the people I've talked to, I should say, that Arch is not really ever taking money out of the revenue sharing side of the Texas Longhorns, that he is fully okay with them building a championship team around him, using some of that revenue sharing money and not having to worry about pulling that from the NIL. He does make plenty in NIL though.
Well, when did the revenue sharing start?
Last year.
So yeah. Last year, like 2024 season,
I think so.
Or before the start of this season.
I don't know. I think it started last year.
Either way, it's quite refreshing, you know, because most kids in college football will sit there and be like, oh yeah, just give me all the money that I possibly can get my hands on. And Arch is sitting there and be like, no, I'm good. You know, I want to win a championship. Let's build it, or let's use that money to build. I don't need it. How many other kids in college football would do that?
How many other kids' parents are millionaires?
It doesn't matter.
I'm saying I'm trying to make sure my mom doesn't have to work versus my mom already does not work. I think those are wildly two different takes on people. Now, I understand, I get trying to win a championship, not going for more money, not leaving and going in the transfer world. I agree with you 100%. There's a line of it, when is enough enough. I think that is a very fair statement to make. But to say, oh, I don't need any of that. Well, he's also making more money than anybody else in Texas.
Well, yes. But what I'm saying is that how many kids in college football, regardless of whether they're millionaires or not, will get offered money and be like, nah, I'm good.
At the age of 21 years old. I think not a ton of them. But again, I think Arch is in a very different world than a lot of those people.
Well, maybe. But, Michael Taft is in a different world than all of those people. And yep. I don't know that he would have done that. You know, I think it's very refreshing because every other thing that I see on social media is like Texas A&M wide receiver signs massive new contract to stay with Texas A&M. And it's just gross.
Yeah. A&M and USC have been doing that now of really leaning into it of like, we get that this is what kids want right now. So we're going to lean into it. And everyone hates it because it just sucks. But I do appreciate that Arch is trying to, more than anything else, I don't care if he takes the money or not. I care that he wants to win a championship. And he understands to win a championship, this is much easier for other people to come in and, you know, get those extra transfers and get maybe an offensive line so he can go number one in the draft next year. All those things are, you know, long-term goals. For what you want to do. So I appreciate that. Matt, go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say it's very Tom Brady and Dirk Nowitzki of him.
Yeah. Also, by the way, Tom Brady's wife was richer than him. Tom Brady was married into millions and millions of dollars. So again, it's easier to do that than when you're trying to support an entire like 30 person family. It's a lot harder to do those things and go, well, that $1 million goes a long way for Tom Brady's like, I guess I won't buy a second yacht this year. the little different of the argument, you know, the decision you have to make there. We did see another piece, though. Jack Injuries today, it was reported, will play in the bowl game, has opted in to the bowl game, and then will decide his fate afterwards, whether or not he wants to go to the draft. The report did not say portal in there anywhere. It did say whether or not he would go to the NFL or enter into the draft, was the report. But it's good to see. He's one of those guys that you think could definitely help his draft stock in this game. It's definitely someone you feel could, you know, continue to go up. His best game was his last game. So if you look at that and say, maybe we can get something going here, you just want to see more of those offensive players opting in for this bowl game and going to play, because it means a big difference that we know there's going to be a lot going on the defense with so many opt-outs. So on the offensive end of the ball, the more continuity you can have, the better.
Yeah, no, I agree. I would think it would be a little bit premature for him to head to the draft, even if he has a great game against Michigan. I think that he would have a real opportunity to up his draft stock with a more, you know, consistent offense next year where he's a bigger piece of it.
Yeah.
But I could have said the same thing about DeAndre Moore. So if he feels that he's ready to go, that's him, and that's his decision. I think Texas would still be in really good hands at the tight end room with, you know, Nick Townsend and Amari Winston. And then you probably go find one in the portal or something. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's and Jordan Washington as well. Let's not forget Jordan Washington. So they've got a lot of tight ends. I think Jack Injuries could be a real star in this offense next year, though.
Yeah.
And instead of being a fourth or fifth round draft pick, he could potentially be a second round draft pick next
year. Yeah, and that's what I think the thing is his ceiling is around a second round draft pick. I don't think he's going to be a first round draft pick, because it's really hard to be a tight end first round draft pick. Not a shot at him. You have to be like truly an elite level, generational kind of guy to be valued as a top pick, or then you could be a back end, but usually in the back end teams are drafting some other things, so you're usually falling in to the second round for tight ends. So that's kind of your ceiling, and the question is, where is his floor after the bowl when he decides whether he's going to go in the NFL or stay in college? Is the floor a fifth rounder, or is the floor a fourth rounder? So the floor is a fourth rounder. You feel pretty okay that I could go second. I could still go day two. And if I'm going day two, I'm going to the NFL. Mm-hmm. But if I drop to day three, and I'm probably just into day three guy, maybe I come back to be a day two guy. So I get where that is, but it's good news there. But I wanted to get into a little bit of what we heard about Muschamp today. We got a little bit more info, because yesterday we were kind of writing that the news came out an hour or so before our show, and then I hopped on with Chip and Zay. So, we were just kind of dealing with it in real time yesterday. Sark spoke to the media today, Matt, and did line up a little bit more of why the decision was made and what we can somewhat expect. First off, in the bowl game, it will be Johnny Nansen calling the plays for the bowl game. So basically, Jabbar Jalouk, he says, will be the running backs coach for the bowl game. He has already been in there. But then PK will be, Johnny Nansen. They're basically like, we can't implement a new system or expect Will Muschamp to call a different system. So since Nansen's already there, then we're just going to have him call the plays. He's done it before. So it'll be interesting to see how different that looks. It will be the same defense that they have already had in all season, but it'll be called by a different guy. So that one, I think, was the first kind of interesting puzzle piece of what they're going to do, Matt.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel about this. I mean, somebody's got to do it. I guess who better to do it than Johnny Nansen? He's been a defensive coordinator before, like you said. He's very familiar with the defense. Maybe he'll do things a little bit differently than PK would in terms of how aggressive he's going to be or what kind of coverages he's going to use. But I think for the most part, working within the system that everybody is used to, and then letting Will Muschamp kind of sit there and observe and figure out what he's working with in a live game atmosphere, I think will be important. And you can use Will Muschamp to help you game plan and help you come up with different schemes and different looks and those kinds of things. But when it comes down to the verbiage of the defense, it, I think Johnny Nansen is the natural choice to make those calls, and I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. Will Muschamp's already on campus. He's already talking to players. He's already there. So he will be involved in it, but Johnny Nansen calling it. And again, we talk about the green dot and just communication of going in. It is somebody you know, not somebody you met. You know, and a lot of these guys know Will Muschamp because he was at Georgia and he recruited them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so a lot of these guys do know Will Muschamp, at least from recruiting, because Georgia and Texas recruit against each other on a lot of these top names. So they do know who he is. But for this game, it just makes sense to have Johnny Nansen do it in the bowl. But then we also heard, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, basically Sark was asked straight up, is this really, was defense really the thing you thought was the big problem with the year? Is that the big problem? And Sark said, no, there was lots of problems. There was plenty of things, but we felt that the offense trended the right direction during the season and the defense didn't. And I think that's fair. Now, the last game of the season, PK dialed it up against Colin Klein and the Aggies like he has done it multiple times. He had a very good game plan for that, and they played A&M very tough. Outside of that, the Vanderbilt collapse, the Florida game, the, you know, even you could say allowing all those points to Mississippi State to have the comeback, all those games maybe trended in the wrong direction. And then someone did bring up as well, not having the guys ready to go when you had a couple of injuries and the coaches on the field being off. And he was like, yeah, that is something that we need to fix. That needs to be fixed. So a lot of those pieces, it felt like not throwing PK under the bus, but saying, yeah, the defense maybe was going the wrong direction at the end of the season. And so we knew that our defense was mostly holdovers from last year. We still had Manny Muhammad. We still had Michael Taft. We still had Anthony Hill. We still had Colin Simmons. We had a lot of guys that we thought were ready to go day one. And for it to not be still as good as it was last year or better, that felt wrong. Where on the offensive side of the ball, we knew we were doing a fresh start. We knew we had a new quarterback, four new offensive linemen, you know, multiple new receivers, new tight end. Like, we knew there was a work in progress on the offensive side of the ball. But defensively, we felt should have been the thing that carried us. And by the end of the season, it wasn't anymore.
Yeah, I mean, there was something that went wrong defensively. I'm not, like, I can't really put my finger on it in terms of, like, what happened with the miscommunications on the back end. Because it was the passing defense that really took a hit over the last few weeks of the season. I think part of that was due to the nature of what PK was trying to do in terms of playing a lot of zone defense and playing a lot of soft coverage and allowing them to kind of dice you up underneath so you didn't allow an explosive play, and not being aggressive enough in the right situations because you didn't feel like your corners were able to hold up enough in man coverage. I don't want to say that Sark is throwing PK under the bus necessarily, but I think that he realized that he just needed to do something. He needed to approach things differently. The best defenses in the SEC, Georgia, Oklahoma, you know, teams like that have a really aggressive front seven. They play with four down linemen. You know, they rush the passer and they play a lot of man coverage and like and do those. It allows you to be more aggressive in that way. PK did. He operated like a Big 12 off or a Big 12 defense or a Pac 12 defense when he was at Washington. He did a lot of, you know, the 2-4-5 defense with two linemen and four linebackers and five defensive, like stuff like that. That's all going to be out the window. And I think that you needed to make a change in terms of physicality and aggressiveness if you're going to compete in the SEC in the long term. And if you're going to be able to beat teams like Ohio State and Georgia and, you know, next season, maybe LSU or Tennessee or whoever else you have on your schedule. It's just, it's a different way of doing things. And I think it's okay to get a fresh start and a fresh perspective and a fresh, you know, way of doing things after you've done the same thing for 5 years and it hasn't worked, then do something that you think maybe could work. And that's kind of what Will Muschamp brings to you. He's also such a brilliant defensive mind. Like he spent almost his entire career under Nick Saban and Kirby Smart. And, you know, he's learned from the best. And he takes little pieces of Nick Saban and little pieces of Kirby Smart and little pieces of his own. And he molds it all together into a different product. And I think it's going to work. I really do. And I think Texas already has the pieces defensively in terms of, you know, the players to make what he wants to do work very quickly. And I think that's extremely important.
Yeah, that's the thing is, and I get what you're saying here, the dog, that both sides of the ball. But I will say the point that I think was true was the offense progressed, the defense regressed. So from week one, the offense was really not ready, and it was a project. But the offense, by the end of the season, the offensive line still wasn't there, but they figured it out, and they were continuing to improve week by week. Which you knew was going to be a bit of a learning curve. We were hoping it wouldn't be as big of a learning curve as it was, but it was a big learning curve. Defensively, though, you returned multiple All-Americans. You didn't really, and then you added in Grayson Littleton, who was good. You added some other good players. So while you did lose players, you kept so many good players on that defense. You didn't expect it to be a liability at times this season, and it was a liability at times this season. So I think that was kind of where he goes. That's where you do it. We'll also throw in, they had talked to Muschamp multiple other times. And basically, the runaround way of saying it was, Will Muschamp had a kid in high school, and he wanted to watch him play football. So it was not the right time to move to Texas. He wanted to stay in Georgia. He wanted to stay where he was at. And last year, one of the reasons why he took off being a defensive coordinator was to spend more time with his son and watch his son play all his games and be there for his son. So that was one of the reasons he feels now. Okay, now it's time to go back to being a coach. And so this is something that they've talked about and wanted to do for a while. This is not something new, because we look at it and say the connection between Sark and Will Muschamp isn't a straight line. You have to go through Nick Saban. But Nick Saban's name was mentioned several times in this, that he's like, no, this is who Nick, basically what I believe you can take away from this today, Matt, and tell me if I'm wrong. When Sark talked to Nick Saban after taking the Texas job, Nick Saban told him, go get Will Muschamp. And that wasn't possible at the time, but it feels like that was a conversation that has been had between Sark and Nick Saban multiple times. Well, you know who you need? You know, who the best defensive coordinator is in football right now, Will Muschamp. You should go get him. Mm-hmm. He's the best defensive coordinator. You heard a lot of that kind of thing, where it wasn't so much of, we don't think PK could still be a good defensive coordinator. We think Will Muschamp could be the best. And that's why they wanted to go with him. So that's why they were pushing that a little bit more of today, Matt. Pushing that this is kind of, we've been talking to him a while, and the time wasn't right, but now the time hits right. And so it is not completely that we wanted to move off of PK, but we really, really wanted Will Muschamp.
Yeah, and I think that that's an okay thing to bring to the table. Like, we love PK. Nobody at Texas is going to say anything bad about PK or have any regrets about PK being the defensive coordinator for the last 5 years. But when you have an opportunity to upgrade to somebody who is going to kind of bring you forward into the future and be able to defend and call defenses against multiple different kinds of offenses that you're going to like you're going to see next year. I mean, you have 12 games in the regular season. I think you play like 8 different styles of offense. He's got the skins on the wall. Everybody raves about him as being one of the best defensive minds in college football. And like I said, you already have the pieces in place that will allow his defenses to thrive, particularly on the defensive front. One of the things that Will Muschamp likes to do is use a bigger bodied, almost defensive tackle style guy on one edge. Do you know who the bill fits for that perfectly?
Alex January?
Lance Jackson and Justice Terry.
Justice Terry. Yeah, Justice Terry for sure, yeah.
Perfect fits. Colin Simmons is an absolutely perfect fit for him on the other side. Yeah. Derek Williams would have been a great fit in this defense, but you know, we'll see if he changes his mind. I don't know. But you thrive in this defense by being aggressive up front, playing four down linemen, and being able to be strong and make a push up front and kind of control the line of scrimmage and use edge rushers and use, you know, aggressive man coverage. And those are all things that I mean, they're going to have to make a change in the portal at something in the defensive back area, maybe. Or maybe, you know, Kobe Black is a really, and Cade Phillips are really good fits for what Will Muschamp likes to do. He's going to get a really good look at those guys. Yeah. And I think that he's going to help them game plan. Like, okay, I would like to see them do a few of these things in this game so I can see what I have here.
And let's not forget, Will Muschamp already knows some of these boosters and donors here in Texas who like the man and were part of the reason why he was named coach in waiting. And if he says we may need a couple, little bit more money, few more dollars, guys, to go get a guy that would really, really cement this defense being great next year, Will Muschamp might be able to make that phone call. So I think there's a lot of those pieces. The final big piece I heard from today was the last piece, which this one probably was the closest to throwing PK under the bus that there was. Again, I don't think he really did. I think he was really trying not to, because like anytime you fire somebody, it's hard to say, well, they didn't do anything to be fired. You know, it's just hard to do that, but he was trying his best to do that. Was basically saying, that's our new defensive head coach in Will Muschamp. I can trust him to do everything on the defense. I don't have to worry about the staff over there. I don't have to worry about the players. I don't have to worry about the play calling. I don't have to worry about the game planning as much. I can go and not use as much of my time that I was with PK to try and put everything together. And during the game, having to continually go over and make sure that the defense is what I want it to be, I can use that more to focus on the offense, which is dual-edged. Because some people would rather Sark do focus on both sides of the football, do focus on offense and defense, be the head coach, give up some of that offense to do it. It feels like Sark this year is digging his heels in further. So we'll know after this year that works or not. It feels like he is digging his heels in further of I'm going to be the offensive guy because that's what they hired me to be. They hired me to be one of the best offensive minds in the country. So I'm going to be one of the best offensive minds in the country, and I'm going to bring one of the best defensive minds out there, and I'm going to be the head coach and offensive head coach. He's going to be the defensive head coach, and we are going to make this work really well together. But it is not a defensive coordinator. It is a defensive head coach.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that. It allows Sark to focus more on game planning and focus more on, you know, I mean, he said it today. It's like I can sit down and talk to Arch after an offensive drive and let Will handle the stuff on defense, and I'm okay with that. I think that's good. If it doesn't work, then maybe you can, you know, look at it next year and be like, all right, maybe I need to bring in a play caller. But listen, you're not going to find somebody out there more than likely who is capable of doing the things that Will Muschamp is capable of doing on the defensive side of the ball. And it's really hard to imagine that there will be a better pairing of offensive mind and defensive mind in college football together than at Texas next year. And being able to, for one to focus solely on one side of the ball and one to focus solely on the other side of the ball, I think will be great. Is it ideal? I don't know. I still like the idea of having an offensive coordinator. But hey, if we've learned anything, it is that Sark is extremely confident in his ability to call plays.
Yeah.
And if he can't do it at a high level next year or at a championship level next year, rather, then that is probably your sign. All right, we need to change that too.
Yeah, I think we've now hit the area with this move that is dictated or placed out that whatever it is, unless barring something terrible, let me knock on wood, I'll say barring something terrible, if Texas is not playing for a national championship next season, there's going to be something happening on the offensive end of the ball.
Yes, I think that that's fair to say. I think that if it's extremely fair to say, if your offense doesn't perform at a high level against Ohio State,
yeah,
and if you get to an SEC championship against Georgia, the teams that have been your Achilles heel over the last couple of years, if you can't figure out a way to beat those teams and have high level offense, even with Will Muschamp doing all that he's doing on the defensive side, then it is time to have that conversation.
Yeah, I think that's pretty out there now, because we've seen this move does not feel like it was necessarily fully Sark. It does feel like it is mostly Sark, but you know, there's pressure. There is a lot of pressure. He does look like a man who's under a lot of pressure right now, who is not happy not being in the playoff, who is trying to hold it together to get through the Citrus Bowl because he really wants to get to next season. Mm-hmm. If Sark could press fast forward and it be the Ohio State and it be week one of college football next year, that would be the happiest Sark could be. He go, I'll miss my baby's first steps if we could just get to week one next year. I need to get to week one, man. I need to get to week one.
I also want to say about throwing PK under the bus, or, you know, whatever anybody else wants to say about PK. Let's remember that against Florida, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, Georgia, and Arkansas, Texas gave up an average of 34 points. That's not championship level.
No.
Obviously, something went wrong.
And, yes, man, it's a thing.
And I think that that is a good indication that maybe things were trending the wrong way, because it's not like you had Michael Taff against Florida. You had Michael Taff against Arkansas and against Georgia. He missed two of those games. Like, you can't blame it all on that. And yeah. And I think that, like, when people sit here and say, well, Michael Taff was hurt, it's like that is kind of more of an indictment on PK than anything else. Because if your defense can't hold together and communicate and make sure everybody's in the right place without a player in the football game, I think that's an issue.
Yeah.
And I can guarantee you that Will Muschamp won't let that happen.
No, that's why it happened. But it was nice Sark came out and talked to the press today. They realized they had to do it. As far as other coaches coming in, other coaching changes, he was asked kind of about that happening, and he was like, look, there's not really a time for us to do it after January 1st because a portal opens January 2nd. So it doesn't feel like you're seeing a lot more changes. Now, could they bring somebody else in on that defense if Will Muschamp has a guy? Yes. 100% they could.
I think they will.
And I think they will too, because right now Will Muschamp is taking over the secondary. But I would assume that they're going to bring somebody else in there. He's actually worked with Mark Orfi before. He was a GA with him at South Carolina. So mm-hmm. They do know each other. They, you know, Sark still spoke very well of Johnny and Lay Allen Clark and Kenny Baker. Like, he spoke very highly of all those guys. So it feels like no one else is getting let go, but you may see some other guys walk away. That happens every year as well. But it feels like the coaching carousel for the most part is kind of already happening. And so we would have seen some of these names already happen because we're not in the playoffs. So,
the name that I heard, from just some reports that I've seen is Trevarius Robinson, who is currently the co-defensive coordinator and safeties coach at Georgia, is somebody that they're going to potentially look at. That is a Will Muschamp guy.
Well, I mean, hey, look, I'm not complaining about anybody from Georgia.
He was also with Will Muschamp at South Carolina. and at Auburn.
That also would make sense if he wants to bring a Georgia guy. That Georgia guy is not going to do anything until after the playoffs, or until he's out of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So they can go, look, we don't need to hire you right away. We're fine, and then once you get knocked out of the playoffs, we'll come back and we'll talk.
Well, I think that's also why Sark, when he was asked if he anticipated any more changes to the staff, like imminently or whatever, he said, no, not right now. And I think what that means is probably there's an assistant or two that is currently in the playoffs that they are looking really, really hard at. Just my personal opinion. Yeah.
And Joe, I don't think he threw him under the bus. Because I think you can. And I think a lot of other coaches have thrown coaches under the bus and said, we would have won more games if it wasn't for this guy. When asked point blank, was defense a problem? He said, no, there was a lot of problems. It was one of the problems, but it was not the sole problem. He's like, mm-hmm. look, there were a lot of problems with the team last year. So he wasn't just saying the reason we didn't make the playoffs is PK and that's why he's out of here, which would be throwing him under the bus. Hell, Hugh Freeze saying the reason I got fired was Jackson Arnold is more of throwing under the bus than what Sark did to PK. And I think PK is going to have a great career afterwards. From what we hear, Michigan's going to hire Brent Venables away from Oklahoma. That's the rumor I'm hearing now, Matt, that all the Oklahoma staff's leaving and they're transferring all the players out there. Just trying to mess with Sooner Cowboys. Throw them off on a Friday afternoon. Matt, before we go to break, I did want to do this. We don't have to rush it, but I did want to go through this because we teased it a few times this week and we haven't done it yet. But I think this will cover us for the next 15 minutes. I want to rank the quarterbacks in the college football playoffs.
Oh, joy. I was writing this down while you were talking earlier and adjusting my list a little bit.
Okay, so I have my list that I made the other day. Joe, I'll tell you this about Muschamp. Muschamp won a national title in 2021 and 2022, right? Or 2022 and 2023 with Georgia as a DC.
Mm-hmm.
He has won two national championships in the last 5 years. So the one he won in 2003 before we got him, not there. We should have been in a national championship before that in 2008, I think, with Will Muschamp. Like, I think Will Muschamp still does that.
I think that's, and I'm not coming at you, Joe. I just think that that's very short-sighted. I think if anything, Will Muschamp was a little bit ahead of his time when he was at Texas. And that the stuff that he liked to do then will still work now.
Yeah.
And I think that he's also adjusted what he does to a certain extent by being on a coaching staff with Kirby Smart and taking little bits and pieces from that. And I can promise you it's going to work. If there is a hire outside of head coach that I have been the most confident about that Steve Sarkisian has made over the last 5 years, it's Will Muschamp.
No, I think he's, like what we've seen him do with Georgia, he has been great. His ex-players talk about him remarkably glowingly. Every ex-Longhorn is like, oh my God, this is great. He is the best defensive quarter. Like, he's the best defensive mind that I've ever worked with, and that includes the NFL. So there's some people very excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's rank these quarterbacks, Matt. Let's get off. I want to start off. We'll start. Do you want to start at 1 and then we'll go to 12? Or do you want to start at 12 and go to 1? All right. We start at 1. Do we have the same guy, the Heisman Trophy winner?
Yes.
Fernando Mendoza, he won the Heisman Trophy. It feels like it's a kind of given that we got to put him in number 1 right here. Is number 1 is Fernando Mendoza. And then number 2, I have the other guy who went to New York and Julian Sand.
Yes, that's what I have. I have Mendoza number 1 and I have Sand number 2. Julian Sand is also...
Okay, go ahead. Sorry, I was going to say.
I was going to say Julian Sand is also the number 1 quarterback number one graded quarterback per PFF. Fernando Mendoza is the number three graded quarterback per PFF.
Okay. So I would say those two. And then for three, it was where I think you could go a couple different ways. And I looked at some other lists. I saw different people at number three. I think there's two guys you could go with here at number three and number four. But I think there's a three and four, and then, you know, like in the groups. So I'll see if we're on the same page on the three and four. My number three is Trinidad Chambliss. The way he's played this season, he has put Ole Miss in that group. I think that I put him slightly ahead of Dante Moore. But I think that those are three and four for me.
Yeah, I have Dante Moore number three. He's the number two graded quarterback per PFF. Mm-hmm. And I have actually have Trinidad Chambliss number five.
Ooh, you have Trinidad. So I have him at three. I think Trinidad Chambliss, what he's done this season, he has just been really, really electric on that Ole Miss team. So I have him as my number three guy. But Dante Moore is right there as number four. Who did you go with as your number four then? Because I'll see if that's my number five.
I went with Gunnar Stockton.
Okay, that's my number five. Yeah.
He's the number six graded quarterback in PFF. Like, I'm putting them in order of, when I say PFF grade, I'm like in order of where they finish in the regular yes. season PFF grade among these 12 quarterbacks. But I have Gunnar Stockton number four. I think he's playing tremendous football right now. And if there's a quarterback that I'm the most afraid to face, I think in the college football playoff, he's number two or number three.
He's up there because he is a just win guy. He is a figure it out, not the most physically gifted guy, but just so like he is scary. So I'm with you. I think that those are the top five. I think we're agreed. Those are the top five pretty cut off those five guys. And there starts to be more questions once we go past five, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like all five of those could win a national championship and it wouldn't surprise you.
Yeah.
So then we go to six, and six is where it starts to open up a little bit more, where you're talking about what are you judging on? Because none of these guys have complete seasons. I think after this, I think they all kind of have ups and downs after five, that some of them had some bad games, some bad halves, some bad, you know, they just moments in there. I think after five, where Gunner maybe start off, but then like he's been pretty consistent. My number six is Marcel Reed. I think he had a really, really good year up until the end. So I'm going to put him at number six, what I think he's capable of doing. But again, a lot of these guys, it's like, well, if they get pressured, pretty much everyone now, if they get pressured past five, I don't know if they're the same guy.
I've got Marcel Reed number seven. So okay. I think we're pretty close.
Okay. Who's your number six?
I think that he has something that, most of the other quarterbacks on this list don't have, and that is electric breakaway speed with his legs.
Yeah.
And of all the quarterbacks in the field, he probably has, the number one or number two ability to beat you with his legs. So, but I've got him number seven just because I don't fully believe in him as a consistent passer.
I don't believe in any of these guys fully past number five. So who's your number six then?
I have Ty Simpson number six.
Okay. That's surprising. It was not Ty Simpson's my number eight.
Yeah. I just think that Ty Simpson has been exposed a couple of times. But when he is on and when he is being protected, he is as good as the top three in terms of accuracy and ability to push the football downfield and make NFL throws and those kinds of things.
I agree with you wholeheartedly that Ty Simpson was higher on my list and he slipped just because the last few weeks against good defenses, it feels like he's a little beat up, feels like he's not 100% right now. And it feels like Alabama as a whole is not 100%. And so you're just like, who's going to show up tonight? Who is going to show up? I think Ty Simpson, talent-wise, is the number six quarterback. Like, 100% talent-wise. He may be higher than Gunnar Stockton, maybe, like, if he's playing his best football. But he just hasn't lately, so he fell down to eight for me. I also had Baron Morton there at seven, because I think Baron Morton, other than the injury, has been really good all season long. He's not elite, but he's been really good in what Texas Tech needed all season long. So I have him in my number seven. Where do you have Baron Morton at?
Also, I want to point out Ty Simpson is the seventh rated quarterback per PFF on this list.
Okay.
Marcel Reed is number 11 on this list in terms of PFF grade. And PFF grade doesn't mean everything. It's just, you know, interesting to think about because I think it matters the most when you get to my number 12.
Yeah.
I have Carson Beck at number 8.
Oh, I dropped him to 9.
I was going back and forth with him and Baron Morton.
Yeah.
I just think that, and maybe this is just the quarterback guy in me. Yeah. Like I'm very much a quarterback purist, and it's the thing that I pay attention to the most in football and the thing that I study the most in football. He is the most impressive thrower of the football from mechanics and arm strength and arm and like accuracy and different angles and all this different stuff that I think is in this field.
Okay.
The problem is when he gets pressured and he gets a little flustered, he can make a ton of mistakes.
Yes. And I think that's for me, the Carson Beck thing is, I don't know if I don't trust Ty Simpson or Marcel Reed or Baron Morton in big moments because I haven't seen him yet. I have seen Carson Beck in big moments, and he is he is shrinkage man, getting out of the pool. it ain't what it used to be when he plays in those big games.
Yeah, and I've got Morton number 9. It was like 8A, 8B for me.
Yeah.
I don't think Morton is as gifted as a passer as Beck, so that was kind of the rub for me, but you could flip-flop him either way. Baron Morton doesn't make the same kind of mistakes, and he's a lot more efficient with the football than Carson Beck is. Like and he can run a little bit, too. So
Do we have the same number 10? Do we have the same
Probably not.
I have Jake Redslaff at number 10.
Yeah, we don't have the same number 10.
Okay, who's your number
10? I have Alonzo Barnett from James Madison. And let me tell you why, Patrick.
Okay.
This guy threw for 2,533 yards and 21 touchdowns. He also ran for 544 yards and 14 touchdowns. He's accounted for 35 total touchdowns this season. He is everything on that football team for them. Offensively.
He is.
Obviously, he hasn't faced the same level of competition. Obviously, he hasn't, had to go up against a Georgia defense or a whatever defense in the SEC or the Big Ten, Ohio State, whatever. But in terms of like an ability to affect the game, I think that he's worthy of being mentioned on this list is not last just because he's a James Madison quarterback. I think he's really talented.
No, I could believe that. I think Jake Redslaff is also an interesting guy who is, he's 16 rushing touchdowns. He can use his legs as well. Definitely somebody who can get the ball out and get what they need done at Tulane. So I think that I have Jake Redslaff there. I think he's a really good player. Who's your number 11, Matt?
Jake Retzloff.
Yeah, no, I can get that. He's been a really good player this season. I may have to switch my 11 and 12 right now. I have Alonzo Barnett at number 12. I could go either way on that one. It's really just a lot of disrespect to James Madison that they shouldn't be in this playoff whatsoever. But I have John Mateer at number 11.
Well, I have John Mateer at number 12.
I mean, I'm fine with that. This is what I'll give to John Mateer. If John Mateer was playing one of the games against Tulane or James Madison, he would be good in this game.
Maybe.
Because he's good against bad teams.
Yeah. I'm going to give you a couple stats, Patrick. Number one, John Mateer has 12 passing touchdowns this year. Alonzo Barnett has more rushing touchdowns than passing touchdowns. He has almost three times as many total touchdowns as John Mateer has passing touchdowns. John Mateer completes 62.1% of his passes. He's got 10 interceptions, which is tied for the most in the field. If you look at PFF grade, which I know is not everything, I've said that multiple times, But if you look at PFF grade, John Mateer ranks 250th in the country in PFF grade if you count FCS teams into that.
Oh my goodness. He's just,
and
he just
ranks really in like the bottom. He ranks in like the 200s if you account FBS teams into it, or like the top 150. Like, he's barely in the top 150. He is not an efficient quarterback. He makes terrible, terrible decisions.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they use him particularly well because they rely on his legs too much.
Well, because they can't. Well, if your quarterback can't throw it, you got to rely on the legs.
Well, I think they put far too much pressure on his shoulders. Yeah. I think he's an extremely talented guy. But, I mean, and I said this, I think I said this yesterday or maybe earlier in the week. He's going to make a throw or two in this football game tonight. Oh. We are going to be like, oh my God, this guy could be a number one NFL draft pick.
He's going to make 7 or 8 that make you think, what the hell was he looking at?
Yeah, he's going to make 7, 8, 9 plays where you're just like, huh? What is he like? Who is this guy? And look, Sooner, I've heard so much bullshit about John Mateer injuries. Like, first it was, oh, well, the only reason that Texas beat them was because his thumb was still hurt. And then people used the thumb injury for the rest of the regular season. As in, like, if that was the issue against LSU, was that the issue against LSU on, like, Thanksgiving weekend? Are you going to use that as an excuse in that game?
They're going to use it as an excuse why they lose to Bama tonight.
He threw 3 interceptions in that game. And he had 2 passes that went over like 60 yards on screen passes.
Yeah.
That's why his passing totals were so inflated. He was 14 of 30 against Missouri and threw for 173 yards. He only threw for 138 against Alabama. He had 0 touchdown passes in that win over Tennessee and a pick. He only threw for 159 yards. Like, how long do you really want me to sit here and say, oh, I'm sorry his thumb was hurt? Because that's not going, that did not affect him over the last 4 weeks. And anybody that says it did is lying to you. He just doesn't make good decisions. And maybe next year he'll learn to make better decisions. I don't think John Mateer is going to be a bad quarterback forever, but right now he's the worst quarterback in the field, and I'm going to stand on that.
No, look, I think if they had a running game, he'd be a better quarterback. I mean, hell, we've seen it with Ty Simpson.
Yes.
Ty Simpson's not as good of a quarterback without a run game. I'm not putting it all on John Mateer, but with no run game and a somewhat leaky offensive line, he has been trying to be Superman all season, and he is not Superman. And what you saw with Arch Manning, and you've seen with many other quarterbacks, is the ability to learn to not be that and find the right places, get the ball out quick, do that. Then you want to get to where you're at. Maybe John Mateer figures that out in the 2-3 weeks and he goes, oh, I get it. Don't try and chuck the ball downfield all the time. I don't think that's the case. I think that's what they want to do. I think that's part of the Arbuckle offense. So you just kind of figure they're going to try and make these big plays because that's what he likes to do.
Yes, but like at a certain point, like the people that are complaining about the thumb or Sooner Cowboys using the excuse of, well, LSU led the SEC in interceptions. That doesn't mean anything. When your quarterback is throwing into triple coverage and throwing a pick, your thumb has nothing to do with that. LSU's ability to cover has nothing to do with that because you are just making the decision to throw it into triple coverage. Against Ole Miss, he had a chance to move the chains on fourth down and continue a drive that had an opportunity to tie the game at the end. And what did he do? He looked at that guy, said, oh no, I know he's going to get a first down and it's fourth down, but I'm going to throw it down the sideline into double coverage and it's going to go incomplete. And then Ole Miss is going to win the game.
Yeah. DJ Lagway is also transferring. He's not in this conversation.
DJ Lagway sucks, man.
All right. And this is what I'll tell you, Sooner Cowboys, if ands and buts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas, but the Sooners won't because they aren't. So it is what it is. All right, Matt, we got to take a break. I got to go stir some queso to make sure it doesn't congeal too much. I gotta get stuff ready for the big game, playoffs tonight. We come back. We got Matt's Bourbon Banter. We come back. We've got our picks. We both went 4-2 this week, Matt.
we were above 500 this week. We're mm-hmm. right back this week. Let's see if we can do it again. We'll go through all that, talk a lot more about the playoffs happening here, just a few hours away from playoff football. We will get into all that, Matt's here, coming back in 2.5 minutes here on Open Gym on Texas Sports Unfiltered.
At Sleep Cycle Center, we can treat your sleep apnea in various ways. My story starts 15 years ago with the loss of my father to undiagnosed, untreated sleep apnea. And this is a very preventable disease, and treatment options are various. Millions of people across America have sleep apnea, and they fail to realize the early warning signs. Fatigue, daytime sleepiness, and snoring are the most common signs. We'll find the best solution using advanced technology, oral and epigenetic appliances, or CPAP. We offer weight loss, oral surgery, and laser treatments. Schedule your appointment today and get your sleep evaluation.
If you're looking to remodel a kitchen, renovate your bathroom, or maybe add some new life to your outdoor space, reach out to our friends at McCall Custom Homes. They are custom home builders and renovators here in Central Texas, and they've been doing it in Central Texas for more than 40 years. It's a father-son team with a ton of experience, and all of that experience is here in the Austin area. So they know what it takes to turn an Austin area home into something truly, truly special. Right now, our friends at McCall Custom Homes are offering free estimates to TSU listeners so they can come out to your place, hear your vision, they can tell you what they can do, and then you can go from there. Don't just take my word for it. Check out their website, McCallCustomHomesATX.com. Look at the gallery of jobs they've done over the last four decades. And then when you're ready, again, reach out to them and they will come to you. McCallCustomHomesATX.com, or you can call or text Mike McCall directly at 512-633-9580. It's McCall Custom Homes. We build value into your home.
Hi, this is Tom McKay, owner of Audiovisual Consultations, and all of us at Audiovisual would like to wish you and your family a happy holiday season. This time of year can get a little hectic, so we want to remind you to relax, enjoy the season with your family and friends, and give us a call at 512-255-8678 for all of your home entertainment needs. This is my favorite time of the year. I love the holidays, the music, the decorations, the presents, the whole darn thing. So this year I'm asking all you listeners to help make this a special holiday for everyone. Smiles are contagious and free, so let's give them away like the government gives away your money. Let's high-five strangers on the street, hold the door for people behind us, tip your servers more than they've ever been tipped before, give to a charity, or hell, give to a bunch of charities. If someone does a good job, tell them they did a good job. Pat someone on the butt, sing in public places just because it feels good. And as always, hug your kids until they beg you to stop, watch some games with your friends, and make love to your wife or your husband. I know there's some women listening too. You can still give us a call at 512-255-8678 if you'd like to get some cool electronics, but more importantly, have a great holiday season and a fucking awesome next year.